Welcome back.
Yeah.
It's the Kaufman Show, another week. We keep knocking them down. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm great, man.
Good.
Yeah, super excited. We've got a killer show tonight.
Yes, we do.
And
I'm excited.
Good.
I'm stoked.
Are you?
I am doing backflips right now.
Wow.
Amazing, isn't it?
Well,
I'm doing them so fast that it looks like I'm not moving.
Honestly, it's the most sedentary backflip I've ever seen.
Incredible.
How was your week, sir?
It was kind of hectic.
Really?
Yeah, I worked. I think I worked 10 days in a row this week. Well, there was a lot going on. Super Bowl and
there were 10 days in this week for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's how hard I was working. 10 days.
Well,
yeah, I'm okay now, though.
We'll try and calm you down over the next couple of hours.
No, please don't.
No?
I'm a little under the weather. I need to keep doing my backflips.
You don't sound under the weather.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, there's no under the weather on.
There's no under the weather here,
come on,
sir. Suck it up.
And may I be the first to wish you a happy Valentine's Day?
You may. You may. You'll also probably be the last.
Well, I figure.
Hopefully, anyway.
A couple of hours ago,
is it Valentine's Day today?
It is.
Oh.
The Montreal Canadiens continued to break hearts in honor of Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that was a hard one today.
I was on board, Jay. I was on board. I really, after the three goals, I kind of thought it was a fait accompli.
You're still on board, Dave. Come on.
Well, it's that balance between wanting the, you know, you don't want to finish ninth or tenth.
Yeah.
That's the real last place. That's bad.
There was a six-minute stretch there where they looked like the Habs of 2 years ago.
Yep.
I couldn't believe what was happening, and I got a tinge of excitement a little bit. I did half a backflip, and I said, wow, okay, these guys are serious. And then the dreaded third period came.
Yeah, it often does.
Yes, it does. It usually does.
It's just sort of how they schedule it out, and the third period has not been kind, especially at home, to the Montreal Canadiens this season.
Maybe it's the Montreal Canadiens that haven't been kind to the third period.
Oh, chicken and egg.
Chicken and egg. Full circle. All right.
All in all, pretty good week for the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, yeah. Four wins in a row. A fantastic game against the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday. Tremendous performance. Carey Price keeping them well into the game. And the boys were looking good for a while there.
Who has remained nameless for the most part on our show, but in honor of Scott Gomez, this is sort of what I thought of this week.
Remove the stone of shame.
Woo-hoo!
Attach the stone of triumph.
Oh!
And that's pretty much it.
And that was it.
Still
it
was, carrying the stone.
Yeah, I rocked my T-shirt on Saturday. On Saturday, we had a tweet up.
Your T-shirt.
Yeah, my Gomez T-shirt. Excuse
okay.
me.
You have a Gomez T-shirt.
I have a Gomez T-shirt.
Good man.
It was collecting dust. I put it on Saturday. I rocked it at the bar at McLean's, and we had a little tweet up there. And I'd like to thank the people, if I may, if that's okay with you.
Well, we've already started, but the All Habs people, awesome.
Allhabs.com, .net, and HabsTweetUp.com. It was quite a performance.
We like the All Habs people. They're good people.
They're good people.
They're followed by a lot of people on Twitter.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Lots going on tonight, Jay. We've got an absolutely huge show. We're going to be speaking with Chad Cordero in about 10 minutes' time.
Okay.
Yeah, more than okay. Chad the Chief Cordero, who, if you're listening, Chad, you've got nothing to be nervous about. He sent out a tweet a little while ago saying that he was a little nervous, hasn't done one of these in a while.
The innovator of the straight build cap. He was one of the first to rock that.
You might get made fun of a little bit for that.
No.
Chad. Just little bit.
No. He started something. Now every major leaguer is busting out their caps that way.
We've got Joel Plaskett on at 12:30. Trust me, I'm very excited about that. As you guys all know, I'm a big fan of Joel Plaskett's. He's got a new album coming out. It's coming out kind of piecemeal. He'll explain the Dickensian nature of it all. We've got Jim Hewson on the show tonight.
Jim Hewson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A voice that I'm very jealous of.
The amount of hours that I spent on my couch playing video games listening to Jim Hewson.
He's going to love that.
Well, come on.
No. Well, of course.
I'm sure that there's a really nice addition on his house because of it.
During trash talking with all my friends back in the late 90s and early 2000s, Jim Hewson's voice was always the calming factor in the background.
There you go. I know I'm excited because it's the one voice that's better than yours that's going to be on the Kaufman Show.
Well, there's a few voices better than mine, believe me. But his definitely is a nominee for that.
We've also got Transloriate on the show tonight again.
Okay. We've got to get to work with some definitions.
And that's right. And for all of you who don't know, and I think most of you do right now because I think he gained about 1,200 Twitter followers since we spoke to him last, including a lot of the Blue Jays.
But, really? Yeah.
Brett, it's the Brett Laurie Babelfish translator. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. If you're not following it on Twitter, Transloriate, special added bonus for the Kaufman Show, Jay. All of the tweets tonight are original. They have never been translated on Twitter by the Babelfish.
Okay.
So it's an
exclusive.
Are
we putting him on the spot?
No.
All right.
Come on now.
No, let's say we are. We'll just say, yes, this is how good this guy is, that within seconds of us saying the Laurie tweet, he will be able to translate it immediately.
It's pretty cool. I'm excited to have the host on once again, and we'll explain it to you a little better. I didn't quite understand it myself last week when I was mispronouncing it as Babelfish, but it's Babelfish.
I was going to say something.
It's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference that went right over my head.
Right.
Well, you can't read them all, huh?
You
can't read them all.
No, you can't.
Or see all the movies, for that matter.
Especially that one.
Well, I don't know.
Read the book. Read the book.
I will. There's a pile of books at home that you wouldn't believe that
collecting
I have to
dust
get.
Like my Gomez jersey.
Well, obviously not. Unless
not anymore.
I'm assuming you washed it after you wore it on Saturday night.
I won't. Yeah, okay.
Unless it's a superstition thing.
No, I was going to say I won't wash it till he scores his next goal, but yeah, I better wash it.
He's going to score. Come on. And you know what? That's not what he's here for.
No, he's not. He's here to move the puck up the ice.
Right.
Which he does extremely well.
And the Canadians are a much better team with him in the lineup than they are without. And I dare anyone to prove me otherwise, because the numbers don't lie. And that's all we're going to say about
him.
And we hope he's listening and he enjoys himself and finds this a nice couple of hours of entertaining radio.
We're behind you, Scotty. Don't worry about it.
There you go. We're behind the team. It's just hard when they break your heart like they do tonight.
Yeah, that was a tough one to watch, I'll tell you. Actually, I was listening to it. I didn't actually watch it.
Oh, really?
I listened to it on TSN 990.
Nice. John and Sergio.
John and Sergio did a great job tonight, and I enjoyed it very, very much.
How did they sound after Carolina went up ahead?
Well, I couldn't hear them over all the swearing going on in my living room. But John is so exciting, especially during that 6-minute stretch in the second period. He was just so into it, and then even he sounded like his heart was broken during the third period.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, and Sergio sounded a little pissed too. He looked like he wanted to kill somebody.
You see that article in the Gazette over the weekend about how fans care much more than athletes do?
I didn't see the article.
Front page of the sports section. Very interesting. Just that. You know, as a professional athlete, it was sort of a follow up to the all the New England Patriots who went out partying after the Super Bowl, and basically saying, yeah, that's they play for the Patriots. They don't grow up rooting for them.
Well, it's a different kind of passion. I mean, the fan base is a cultural passion, whereas the players is more of an it's like a going to war type passion. You know, your brother's in arms, and it doesn't matter what colors you're wearing. The fact is you're all wearing the same colors, and you go out there and you give it your 100%. Most of them do every single night. From a fan's perspective, it's more of a cultural.
Yeah, exactly.
A local, a patriotic type thing.
Which is a totally different thing.
Right. It's completely different. I don't think you can really compare it.
So Chad Cordero is going to be on in a few minutes. And we're going to take a break in advance of that.
Okay.
And then we've got Joel Plaskett, whose music we're going to go out to break on. And, man, it's going to be a great show tonight, Jay.
Joe's hype, man.
Honestly, we've got ourselves a really good one tonight, and I hope you all stay up with us. You can follow me on Twitter at The Kaufman Show. You can follow Jay at J-Pub Radio. We've got ourselves $50 in gift certificates to give away to Brewtopia, a lovely establishment on Crescent Street downtown. somewhere you might find me. They got some good music down
and
there.
And me. You'll find me there, too.
Well, good. We're going to go down together, then.
Yes, we are.
All right.
Love that bar.
Chad Cordero in a couple of minutes. Joel Plaskett afterwards. This is The Kaufman Show.
Was at the post office buying a stamp, thinking that the girl behind the counter was fine. I said, "You think this will get there by Friday, ma'am?" She says, "I get off work at 9:15.
Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, here to entertain your earbuds on this fine Monday evening, now Tuesday morning. I'm going to keep playing this romantic stuff for you, Jay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For the whole Valentine's Day thing?
Right. Right.
I'm touched.
Can we pretend that every day is Valentine's Day?
Maybe not.
Okay. Speaking of broken hearts, let's bring in our next guest. Very excited. It's been a long time since his name was repeated on this station, but it was oft repeated in the late summer of 2003 or fall of 2003 and, well, all of 2004. And it's a pleasure to welcome back via airwaves to Montreal, Chad the Chief Cordero. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. You're not nervous anymore, are you?
I got a couple butterflies in my stomach, but I think I'm better.
You've pitched in an All-Star game. How is this making you nervous?
Pitched in the World Baseball Classic.
I always get nervous about these type of things. I don't know what it is about it. I don't know.
Well, I got to say, we were the fans that were there every day, and let's treat this no different than us ragging you at the ballpark for your for not bending your cap.
All right. Sounds good.
Speaking of, why don't you bend your cap?
I don't know. Because when I was in high school, I bent it a lot. And for some reason, when I was in college, I just kind of changed. I think it's because I saw everybody else on my college team doing it. I thought it was like, gosh, that style looks really cool. So I kind of just went with it. And then people thought, you know, I ironed my bill and stuff, or I put some heavy books on it or something to keep it flat. But truth is, that's just how they come straight out of the box. So I just never touched it.
Was it comfortable?
Oh, I loved it.
Okay, because it really didn't look it. It looked pretty awkward.
No, because see, I have such bushy eyebrows, and like I wanted to hide my eyebrows. So that was the main reason why, I guess. But no, it was real comfortable. I loved it.
Now, Chad, let's do a sort of chronologically through your time with the Expos, because you sent me a message saying that you haven't had much of an opportunity to talk about it, and well, here's a great opportunity. Your debut was in Florida right after the famous or infamous, however you want to look at it, Phillies series in Montreal. Now, had you been called up to the club? Were you here for the Phillies series?
No, I was still in, because how it happened was, I was in Brevard County, which was the A-ball team at the time. I was playing with them, and I was all packed up, ready to go, because we had just finished our last game. So I was packed up, ready to go home. and stuff. And then I got the call into the manager's office saying that I had been called up. And so I was like, this is awesome, you know, because, I mean, I was only like a month and a half out of college, I think it was, you know. So I think I had just missed that Philadelphia series, and then I just took a 3-hour road trip down to Miami, and that's where I made my debut the same day I was called up.
Okay, so you weren't there the night before either, which was a game where the Expos lost in the bottom of the ninth inning after a tough loss for the team. They'd gone into that game with a share of the wild card. What was the clubhouse like walking in that day?
It was real tense because when I got called up, they were, I guess, from what I had heard and from what guys have been telling me, they were expecting some reinforcements, you know, guys who had probably had been up, you know, in the past, you know, a few times, and they were expecting the kid, you know, fresh out of college to be called up, you know. So it was kind of tense, you know. Nobody really spoke to me because they were kind of upset at the situation. You know, I think that was the year, I think it was the year when they said they weren't, Major League Baseball told the team that they weren't going to have any call up.
Correct. The team was waiting for Termell Sledge to be called up from, I think, Edmonton, which was the Pacific Coast League affiliate at the time.
Right. Yeah. So they were, you know, so they're expecting reinforcements. And here I am, you know, a kid right out of college coming up who had no experience. You know, only had, I think it was like 19 games in the minor league, and I'm supposed to be the one who's coming up to possibly try and help them, you know, get that wild card berth and stuff. And so nobody really talked to me for the first 2 weeks. And then after those first 2 weeks, I think I hadn't given up a run yet. So I think guys started warming up to me. And I mean, and plus I kind of kept to myself, you know, I didn't really talk to the guys unless I was spoken to, you know, cause that's kind of what I had heard when I was getting called up was, you know, respect the guys, you know, a lot of them might be upset because, you know, you're such a young kid, you know, and then in the wild card, just kind of keep to yourself, you know, don't really say much and only speak when spoken to. And that's exactly what it did. So they kind of started warming up to me. After that, you know, I just kind of just kept to myself, kept quiet, you know, went out there, did my job, worked hard at it. And I think they started to have some respect for myself because, you know, I wasn't there, you know, wasn't up there saying, oh, you know, I should have been up there earlier or anything like that. I just kind of was like, hey, you know, I was, you know, I just was there. I mean, I was ready to go home and, you know, the team had just called me up to come help. So I just, you know, just kept to myself.
It's unbelievable to think of you being iced out by your teammates. Was it the same as, what, did you get the same reaction from management, Chad?
No, I mean, the management was really good, you know. Frank was, you know, Frank talked to me all the time. There was a couple guys like Jamie Carroll. I mean, he kind of took me under his wing, you know. He helped me out a whole lot. I mean, not all the guys were like that. I mean, they were all real respectful and real nice. And they were just kind of upset because they were expecting, you know, someone with major league experience to come up, you know. So, I mean, they were really nice. They were still really nice to me and stuff. They said hi. You know, but that was basically it. You know?
Yeah,
you know, but I mean, there were a couple guys who talked to me on a regular basis. Like I said, Jamie Carroll was one of them. Todd Zeal was another one. And Joey Isham was another one. So I mean, there was a couple guys who, you know, who spoke to me, and you know, but for the most part, they were all real nice. You know, they were just expecting, you know, someone else to be called up.
Did you know by the end of the 2003 season that your spot was secure for 2004?
No, I was going into spring training. I was nervous. I mean, it was my first spring training. You know, I didn't know what to expect, and I was kind of like just hearing horror stories about, you know, guys getting sent down on the last day, or you know, getting an apartment, you know, up in Montreal, and then learning that they were getting sent down and having to figure out what they're going to do with that apartment. So I was kind of nervous. So I just kind of waited till the last day to figure out what I was going to do, and end up just kind of staying with Jamie Carroll for the whole year. Because I didn't want to make plans and have them, you know, have something happen. But I mean, I had no idea that I was, you know, secure, had a spot already. I mean, I thought maybe, you know, go back to AAA or AA, you know, get some more seasoning in, build my arm back up a little bit more, and and do that. You know, I wasn't at all expecting to make it out of spring training.
Instead, you're basically anointed the setup man after spring training for Rocky Biddle. And things go pretty smoothly for you until May when you're given a chance to close.
Yeah, I mean that was another thing that I wasn't expecting, because we had Luis Ayala on the team at the time, and you know, and I think everybody was kind of thinking that if Frank did replace Rocky, it was gonna be with Luis, you know, and here I am, you know, getting that opportunity to close, and I just kind of took it and ran with it, you know. I was used to that spot, you know. I didn't treat it any differently than I did, you know, in the seventh or eighth innings when I came in. I just went out there, tried to do the job the best that I could, and hopefully, you know, just try not to disappoint Frank.
With less nerves than when you're on the radio, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is mind-blowing for me, man. I cannot believe that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hat kind of helped out a little bit, because it kind of made me look intimidating, you know, but in actuality, I was just hiding my, you know, how much I was shaking back underneath that cap.
Now, Chad, I have to ask, out of full disclosure, I have a theory which I have written down and had published about how you became the closer of the Montreal Expos. And it involves my friend Max Harris, who used to be a co-host on my baseball show on the station, who asked Frank Robinson at an Expos fan day why you weren't closing. And the next day you had your first save. Does this story hold any water for you? Do you think it's possible that a 15-year-old was co-managing the Montreal Expos and managed to get into Frank Robinson's mind and help him change it?
It's possible. I mean, it could have been where, you know, Frank was kind of hearing that question a lot, maybe, you know, and then Max probably came in, and he was probably the one who kind of, you know, tipped him over, you know, into that kind of thinking, you know. But I mean, I really have no idea. I was just kind of, you know, I just came to the ballpark like it was any other day, and Frank called me in the office to tell me I was closing, and I was kind of in shock, you know. I mean, I wasn't expecting it, you know. I was expecting it to go to Luis, you know. And so, I mean, who knows? I mean, that's possible. I mean, Frank was kind of, you know, he was a different thinker, you know. So, I mean, he, for the most part, you know, he wasn't really open to suggestions like that. But, you know, I think we were kind of struggling at that time. So who knows? He's probably open, hoping for anything.
Now, I've said it to you before, but I'll throw it out there on the radio. You were one of the few bright spots to watch in that 04 season. It was very difficult to drag my ass to the ballpark every day.
Right.
And you were one of the few. And you know what? And Jamie Carroll was another. And I think
Brad
it's really
Wilkerson.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah. I think it's especially cool, Jay, that Chad lived with Jamie and that Jamie sort of kept him under his wing in his rookie year in Montreal. I think that's very neat.
Yeah.
And how awesome is it that he's still in baseball and still kicking butt?
Yeah, I remember when I was, you know, when he was with us in D.C. after our first year in D.C. in 05, our GM said that, because he traded away Jamie Carroll, and he said it's because he didn't think Jamie could play anymore. And, you know, here it is, what, 7 years later, and Jamie has 10 years in the big leagues, I think it is now.
Yeah.
You know, and he's, I mean, he's a valuable part of every team that he's ever been on. You know, I mean, he played second, short, third. I think he played left field for us a couple times, and he was even willing to catch. So, guys like that are rare, you know, and he's good at any spot that you put him in. You know, he doesn't care that he's smaller than most guys. You know, he's just going to go out there, work harder than the other guy, and you know, it's paid off for him, and I'm really happy for him. I mean, I'm glad I was able to kind of to get to know him and to have him kind of show me the ropes, you know. And you know, I'm thankful, grateful to him for doing that for me, you know. And I'm really happy for him, you know, to be able to play as long as he has.
Chad, I know I told you we'd be on 15 minutes. You mind if we keep going? I'm having too much fun to stop.
Yeah, no problem. Let's do it.
All right. The one sad part of this conversation, tell me about being around for the last days of the Expos.
It was, you know, it was hard. You know, that last game in Montreal, I mean, I was only there for just over a year. But I love that city. You know, I mean, it was, I honestly think, and a lot of guys think this, it was probably the best city to go and play in. You know, I mean, I know visiting teams love going there. I know all the Expos players, they love that city, you know, and for us to have to move, you know, and relocate, you know, it was a tough thing to handle, you know, because we weren't sure what we were doing. We didn't, you know, I remember when I first signed, I think that was still a time when they were thinking about contracting the team, you know. So it was tough, you know. And then having that last game in Montreal, you know, having to have the game stopped a couple times because fans were starting to throw golf balls onto the field, you know, that was a tough thing to see. And then to have the threat of us possibly having to, you know, forfeit the game because of it, that was even worse.
It was mind-blowing. And, you know, talk about a few bad apples spoiling the bunch.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad because, you know, yeah, we didn't have a whole lot of fans that went to the field and went to the games and stuff, but the fans that we had go, they were diehard fans.
Well,
I remember I used to see, yeah, I mean, it's true because, I mean, I used to see, even when we moved down to D.C., I used to see the same father and son that I used to see sitting behind our dugout go down to spring training every year. And I never caught their names, but I've never seen them every game in Montreal. And then seeing them in spring training in Melbourne when we became the Nationals was pretty cool. And I remember Claude Ramon, he used to come down all the time with us and come to the clubhouse. So, I mean, just the fans, they were great. You know, it's just unfortunate, you know, there wasn't a whole lot, you know, I thought the fans that came, they knew baseball, they loved it, you know, they wanted to be there, you know, and they wanted the team left in Montreal, and it's just unfortunate that we had to move.
Yeah, one of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with, man.
Yeah, I mean, any time, you know, you lose a team, you know, or lose anything that's special to you, is, you know, it's hard to deal with, you know, especially, you know, Montreal, I mean, it was, like I said, it was the greatest city to play in. I loved it there.
But that being said, we're on quite the high heading into Washington and ended up being an all-star, their player of the year, and leading the league in saves.
Yeah.
So I mean, it wasn't all bad for you, Chad.
No, not at all. I wish I could have done it in Montreal, too. But, I mean, having to being an all-star and being able to represent my team, you know, that's a special thing. And I was lucky to be able to make it to one. You know, I wish I could have made it to more, you know, but being able to make it to one and actually having pitched in an All-Star game is, that's a pretty cool thing. That's something I, you know, could tell my kids when they're older.
And the first half of that season must have been just so exciting with the Nats in the pennant race.
Yeah, I mean, because we were the surprise of baseball. You know, nobody was expecting us, you know, to really do much, because coming off of that year in Montreal, I think we only won, like, I think it was like 64 games. You know, we weren't really expected to do much, you know, and here we are, I think at the All-Star break, we were 51 and 31, I think it was, or something, or at the halfway point, we were 51 and 31, and leading the Braves by like 8 or 9 games at the break, I think it was, you know, and so it was a lot of fun. I mean, the fans down there were great. I mean, they were really into the team. They supported us really well. It's kind of dropped off, I guess, the fans a little bit down there, but they're still doing pretty good. But I mean, that first year was, it was magical, you know. So, and then I enjoyed myself down there for sure.
I would imagine. I know when we had Zach Day on, one of the things he talked about was meeting the president.
Yeah.
Something that was thrilling for you, or?
Yeah, I mean, because, like, you know, every day it seemed like you're meeting someone new. I remember George Bush. I mean, he threw out the first pitch a couple times. The 4 years I was in D.C., but we got to go to the Pentagon. We got to go to the White House and meet the I got to meet the ambassador of Japan, who was a diehard baseball fan. I think he's the commissioner of the Japanese baseball league now.
Oh,
so
wow.
I mean, you just get to meet a whole lot of people that, I mean, for me, I never thought I would ever be able to meet, and just, you know, I was real lucky. You know, baseball's kind of opened up a lot of doors for me.
Now, how long did you pitch before you tore your labrum?
I had five years. I have 5 years in the big leagues now, so, you know, just kind of a random thing. You know, I remember it was the first game of the year in 08. And we were in batting practice, and I was just playing catch, and all of a sudden I felt this sharp pain run down from the shoulder to my elbow, and I didn't know what it was, you know. So I think what happened was just all that wear and tear. I think I might have come up a little bit too quick, you know, out of college and stuff, because in college you're only throwing like 40 games a year, and in the big leagues, I was throwing close to 80 games a year, and warming up every day, every almost seemed like every day of you know of the season and stuff. So I just I don't think my arm might not have been ready at the time, but you know I was I didn't know that I was just I was excited to be in the big leagues and stuff. So I think that might have had to had a little bit to do with it, but I think for the most part, just I just wasn't I think I just was throwing a whole lot, just wasn't used to it.
Well, as we know, it's one of the most difficult injuries to come back from, and in fact, the poster boy for a little while was Rocky Biddle as the successful
right.
example of somebody coming back from that injury.
Yeah,
But it's not it's not usually long term. It's gotten better now, but it must be a very difficult feeling to know that one simple game of catch and boom, there it goes.
Yeah, I mean, because like the shoulder surgery, I mean, it's the hardest thing to come back for, to come back from, just like you were saying, Tommy John, it used to be everybody dreaded Tommy John, but now you have Tommy John and you come back throwing harder now, and now it's the shoulder, it's like you said, it's gotten a lot better, but right now I think it's like a 60% chance that you won't come back, and as of right now I'm part of that 60%, so hopefully, I can take this year off, build up my arm strength a little bit more, and hopefully make a comeback next year.
Oh, look, you know what, Chad? I honestly didn't know that was your intention. I thought that when you'd retired, you'd retired. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I mean, I'm going to do that. I mean, I've already started playing catch. I'm coaching a high school team right now, so that allows me to work out with the kids. Play catch with the kids. I'll start throwing bullpens probably late this summer. And stuff, because I want to come back. When I retired last year, I was kind of, I had a bunch of stuff on my mind. I mean, I was dealing with the loss of my daughter just a couple months before that and stuff. So I think that had a lot to do with it. And I was missing my family. So, and plus, that plus the fact that I wasn't doing very well. And I just thought, I just need to take a year and a half off, be with my wife and kids, and get my head straight and give my arm some more time to heal.
That sounds like a very good plan, Chad.
Yeah, and it's I've loved my time off. I'm getting the itch to go back. I mean, I listen to MLB Network like all the time and stuff. I'm on my way to work, and I'm getting that itch to want to go back. To go back, but as of right now, I just want to be home with my kids and my wife for a year and just kind of enjoy that. And right now, I'm loving it.
Chad, we wish you the best of luck. You still have many, many fans up in Montreal and all throughout Canada, and we'll always remember you as one of the brighter spots at the end of it all for the Montreal Expos.
Thanks.
And hopefully, we can be in touch. If you're watching so much MLB Network, we might lean on you for some analysis during the season, Chief.
All right.
Thanks so much.
No problem.
Have a great one. There he goes, Chad Cordero. An in-depth, extensive interview with Chad Cordero.
We just broke a story, too, there.
Yes, Chad Cordero is attempting a comeback.
I would love to see that.
Oh,
I would
awesome.
Love to. The guy is clearly a class act, and I would love to see him come back. We didn't have time to get into it, but he does hold a major league record.
Do tell.
15 saves in 1 month, held also by two former Expos, John Wetland and Lee Smith.
Hey, look at that. All right.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I just found that out. So his name is in the record books. If he doesn't make a comeback, well, he's forever immortalized.
It was a pleasure to speak with Chad the Chief Cordero, and I think we're going to take a little break, Jimmy, and then when we get back, we're a little behind right now, but we're going to be running our interview with Joel Plaskett next.
Nice.
So check that out, and here's some Plaskett. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be right back with Joel Plaskett.
Hey, this is Joel Plaskett from Halifax, Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, and you're listening to the Kaufman Show.
Let's make a racket for the old and young.
Making them up as we're going along, passing the guitar, passing the wine, traveling time. We gotta choose a weapon for the town we take. Sing and celebrate.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Our next guest is one of my favorite recording artists of all time. We play his music all the time on the show, so you guys know who he is. We end every show on I Love This Town. And we're excited to have Joel Plaskett in on the Kaufman Show tonight. Hello, Joel.
Hey, Dave. How you doing? Thanks for the intro. Hell yeah.
Well, what can I say, man? You know, it's not often that you get to talk to somebody that you've always wanted to talk to. And I love what you're up to right now. It's a super ambitious project. And I can't wait for you to tell Montreal all about it.
Well, yeah, I'm excited about it, too. It's been a lot of fun so far. I'm working on this record called Scrappy Happiness with my band, The Emergency. And we're recording a song a week, recording and releasing a song a week. So I have to sort of deliver by the end of a week, and it comes out at the beginning of the next via iTunes, digitally, and then, you know, kind of debuting on the radio, the internet and such. And then at the end of the project, we'll release it as a physical copy, you know, on CD and vinyl and stuff. So it's been really, really fun. First couple of weeks, I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. And then you start to realize you got 10 weeks ahead of you.
I'm more than happy to give our friend Rich Terfry a plug, Joel. He's always been a good friend of the show, and I know that you debut the song every week at 5:15 on Tuesday, I believe, on Rich's show, right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. On CBC Radio 2 there on Rich's show. They've been sort of sponsoring and debuting the tunes, which has been really cool, actually, just to have kind of a national platform on which to showcase the music every week. It's been really cool. I've been really pleased at the attention the project's gotten across the board from all sorts of people. But also, I'm kind of surprised that somebody hasn't already sort of done what I'm doing in Canada, because really, there's no reason why you can't release music quickly in the day and age that we're in, you know?
Is it something that you had thought of doing before? I mean, I look at Three, which was an ambitious project on its own, but really very different. Three albums, 30 songs. It had a very different feel than what this seems to be going for.
Yeah, well, I kind of wanted this to be really, not an about face per se, but definitely a different feeling than that record, which was really kind of composed and took a long time to make. I thought, what can I do that would be different, that would be maybe kind of as interesting for me? Because I could have followed Three just with a single record, you know, but I thought, well, I mean, I hate to say it, but certainly having a little bit of an angle to a project just helps frame it for the public, because, you know, the reality is kind of releasing music, no matter how good your music is, or you think your music is, you know, getting people's attention is another thing altogether, right? What separates one record from the next. By me, you know, what separates your own music from the last record, and also what separates your own music from everybody else's. There's a lot of music out there these days and a lot of access, right?
It sure is. So, but I mean, you have platforms, you have something like the CBC that really pumps you. And I mean, you are the all Canadian musician right now. I think you're holding that banner.
I am all Canadian. Yes. Well, my dad, you know, he immigrated from England. There's definitely like a little bit of Britain there too, but, you know, I mean, I feel pretty lucky to have been able to make my way of it from the East Coast and have an audience nationally in Canada and a sort of small growing audience internationally as well from going about here and there. But really, I feel like my whole focus is within this country for the most part, and I really feel lucky to have been embraced in that way by, you know, institutions like the CBC and just as importantly, just touring and getting into clubs and having people show up and have the shows get better every time I come back to town. Like I've never been one to sell a lot of records, you know, even like Thrush Hermit back in the day. We came from a time when records were still selling and we weren't selling them, you know, but the plus side of that is I never really felt the pinch of the downturn in the record business that sort of happened for a lot of people who had gone from selling 100,000 records to selling 10,000.
Right.
That never really was an issue for me. So I've always felt a little forward motion and momentum and my expectations, I've always just tried to keep them reasonable. and as a result, you know, I've been able to make a go of it. It's been pretty great.
We're in conversation with musician Joel Plaskett on The Kaufman Show. Joel, very briefly, this is a sports channel. I wanted to ask you, Our Place in the Sun has a few baseball references peppered in there. Are you at all a baseball fan?
Well, you know, not in terms of following it. I got to say, my sort of, I'll watch the finals of just about anything.
Okay.
But I don't have cable, so it limits what I can actually catch. I really love watching basketball finals, you know, because I think if I gravitate towards one sport because of my height, it may be basketball.
Well, I saw that.
Having said that,
yeah.
I've just made a video for this week's song, a song called Something Else, which has some old Super 8 footage that my wife's family actually, my wife had all this old Super 8, and there's a bunch of baseball stuff that bookends the video. So, you know, if we want to, I can at least build the mythology around my baseball fandom.
Good, we can fake it.
Yeah, exactly, we can fake it.
Joel, I wanted to ask you about the up-and-coming young Canadian musicians that are now paying homage to you and looking up to you. I look at the Arkells and their new single, Kiss Cam, which has the line, true love is always complicated, and it seems like it's really done to pay homage to you. How does that feel to have this whole new generation of Canadian artists looking up to you?
Well, I'm like most definitely honored by that. I know those guys. I've shared the stage with them on a couple of occasions, and they've expressed to me how much they like my music, which is really cool. And I mean, I've been at it for a long time, and I know what it feels like to admire people's work and get to meet them. That happened to me. I met Nick Lowe a couple of years ago, and I was really thrilled because he's been somebody that I've looked up to for a long time and always loved his records. And that was like a real moment for me, was meeting him, you know. And So having said that, I think, you know, what I really believe in, especially kind of within the framework of the way it works in Canada. I mean, it's a huge country that has a surprisingly small and connected music scene and a lot of history, and we take pride in what we do. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of about just going out there and doing it. And I've been making music I've been touring since 1993, Thrush Hermit, and then, you know, with the emergency and solo and doing whatever opportunities are there, I go and take them. And so it's just nice to have, to kind of have built an audience and built the respect of other musicians. And so when guys like the Arkells come up to me and say, hey, we're fans, that means a lot, because, you know, it's like there's been a lot of time that's gone into it. And I love the fact that, you know, there's a kind of payoff there and a sort of respect that comes from other musicians. That means a lot to me. And I get that a lot, because I think just simply because I've been at it for a long time and I've met a lot of people, you know, it's really cool.
We're finishing up with Joel Plaskett on The Kaufman Show. Joel, is next week's song ready to go, or is it in your head? Do you have, or what about the week after?
Well, we are just about to drop this something somewhere else. That's the name of this week's tune, but I have to deliver, you know, next week's tune by Thursday of this week. So I haven't pressed record on anything yet.
Oh, wow.
Week. I know what I'm going to do. It's going to be a simple acoustic song. So I've been lazy I've been feeling like, no, it's just going to be the moment. Like, I'll putter around, and then hopefully at like 10 at night, some night I'll just hit record and capture the magic. But I don't know. You know, I never really know what's happening until it happens. What's kind of cool about the project. It's fun.
You ever going to give yourself a deadline like this again?
I, you know, I got to say it's actually healthy working on this deadline. I think it's a neat way to make a record. Every song gets a lot of focus. You get a week to think and work on something. That's more than you would spend if you just went and hammered out a record in 3 weeks. But I got to say the having to sustain that level of focus for 10 weeks without really being able to take like a week off, I think is there's a certain fatigue that comes with this. So I don't know that I would tackle it in the same way again. But you never know. It's a pretty neat way. The most satisfying thing about this project, I'll say, has been just not having any time to second guess and sending the tunes out into the public as fast as possible. So that it's like I did that and I haven't had any time to reflect on any of it. And I got to say, I really like that. And we're hitting the road pretty hot on the heels of the record being finished. And so I just like the fact that it's like 6 months of work, you know, of you know, you just dive in, not even like 10 weeks, and then you're on the road and everything's fresh and new.
We will be seeing you in Montreal April 25th. And I imagine because of the way that the – and I think of it as kind of Dickensian, the way that the songs are coming out, the way that Dickens used to release novels serial-wise. He'd do one chapter a week or one paragraph a week.
Right on, yeah. Hey, that's like that – exactly. I'm tapping into something – far more classic than what I thought, you know, radio in the 1960s was like. We're going back to
The 1860s, exactly.
The 1860s, exactly.
But it must lead to some serious instant gratification as well. Like, I know you're very popular on very active on Twitter, and I'd imagine that every 5:15 on a Tuesday, it kind of jumps and explodes, doesn't it?
It's cool to, like, I've been making a point of trying to be more active online, particularly with this project too, because I think its nature is really in the moment, and mm-hmm. and online is where a lot of things are happening in the moment, right? You can get sucked into a vortex there, so I'm a little bit cautious. Like I find myself picking up my iPhone and then going, "Oh, wait a second! Like this isn't the time to go see what people are saying. This is the time to do work," you know. But it is really rewarding too, and it's really cool to see something come out and then you know see some feedback from people. Like I try not to get too hung up on it, up on all that stuff. But at the same time, what's cool is most of what's been coming out and being said about it has been really positive, and I find that really encouraging. And it makes me just want to like kind of up the ante the next week and deliver something good. You know,
Joel, I think we got to let you get back to work right now. But I want to thank you so much for your time and thank you for all the great music. We will continue to play it on the show. And huge fan, really excited for your upcoming show in Montreal.
Appreciate it. Me too. Thanks a lot.
What am I thinking? I'll give you three guesses. Precious, precious, you're too precious. Never get your hands dirty while you're making your messes. Precious, precious, you're too precious. You're like a fragile Ming Dynasty vase. You're a rare 45 that you're scared to play.
And thank you to Mr. Joel Plaskett. That was quite a thrill. Hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. Let's shift gears, shall we?
We are definitely shifting gears.
I don't even know how to describe it without any further ado. Last week we had Translaureate on. He is the Babelfish, Brett Laurie.
Babelfish.
Babelfish, correct. We're going to describe it. We have a little clip to play for you, and then we're going to introduce the host.
The babelfish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy, absorbing unconscious frequencies and excreting a matrix of conscious frequencies to the speech centers of the brain. The practical upshot of which is that if you stick one in your ear, you instantly understand anything sent to you in any language.
So, you know, there you go. I think that pretty much describes Transloriate. Now, Transloriate, tomato, tomato, potato, potato. He is on Twitter. You need to follow this Babelfish. Good evening, Babelfish.
Greetings again, gentlemen.
How are you?
I am well, thank you.
How's your English tonight?
Not as good as my French.
Wow, wouldn't that be something if Brett Laurie started tweeting in French?
He's not.
We're going to try a little something different off the top, Transloriate.
Oh.
I would like to see just how good of a Babelfish you are. We're going to see if you can reverse tweet something. I'm going to give you a sentence, and you're going to Brett Laurie it up for me.
Oh, very well.
Think that can be achieved?
Absolutely.
All right. It's coming at the ear right now. I had a steak dinner with my friends. Later on, we watched the Leafs lose badly to the Habs.
Crushed cows with the boys, then hashtag team unit time on hashtag HNIC. Leafs brutal versus the Habs. Hashtag clean it up. Hashtag big leagues.
Yeah, this guy can do anything. Transloriate, we have a Brett Laurie impersonator in studio to impersonate Mr. Laurie and give this its true. I'm sorry, impersonator. What am I talking about? Brett Laurie's in studio. Hey, Brett.
What's up, dudes?
Okay, Brett, I think you two should just take it away. I'm going to sit back and watch the fireworks.
All right, kicking it one time on the reel. I'm going to shout out one of my tweets. All right, here we go. Tomorrow, 23 punches tickets. Hashtag got heem. Lindsay's a beauty. Two dingies. And Jay Parencibia, 9, was a beaut throwing balls to me after punchies. Yeah.
I am enthused by the result of today's baseball game. Brandon Morrow struck out many hitters. Adam Lind batted 2 home runs. And J.P. Arencibia managed the tradition of throwing the ball to me after a strikeout with great efficiency.
All right, sweet Lou. All 3 goals in shootout. Like, figure it out, bro. That is soft. Hashtag Lou Softy.
After watching Roberto Luongo's subpar demonstration allowing all 3 goals in the shootout, I reckon he has lost the mastery of his goaltending skills.
What is going on, everyone? Who's beasting today?
I inquire of you, is there anything of interest happening? Who among you might be surmounting their current goals with strength and fortitude?
Dude, that's all I got. I don't know what this dude's talking about, but I got to fly, baby. Peace. Yeah. Hashtag. There's no need for a translation on that one. That was just me saying goodbye. I mean, that was Laurie saying goodbye.
That's right.
Yeah, he left. He just busted out the studio, and he's gone. Right back to Toronto.
Got him. Translaureate, thank you.
You're welcome.
And we look forward to next week's.
Sounds good.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great, man. I love that segment.
Me too. And I think we're on to something with that yeah. With that Babelfish.
Yeah, our thanks to Brett Laurie for just coming down for 10 seconds in the studio.
Yeah, that was, you know, the last 15 minutes to have Translaureate, Brett Laurie, and Joel Plaskett. By the way, in the interview, he was talking about the baseball Super 8. This is the song. It's out today.
Cool.
It's called Somewhere Else. This is The Kaufman Show. Jay and I will be right back with Jim Hewson. Take a walk in a wild world. Welcome back to the Kauffman Show, hour number two. Feeling good, Jay?
Feeling fantastic. I'm a little stoked right now. This guy's one of my favorites.
You had the stoked language before when you were speaking like Spicoli for
Dude,
the...
totally stoked. Stoked. Hash mark yee.
Our next guest, as I said before, is our first ever guest with a better voice than my co-host, Jay Farrar.
I digress, and I certainly accept that.
I think he's the first Gemini Award winner to appear on the program with us, Jay.
Is he?
I think so. I can't think of anybody else that's... that has reached that peak, and we're going to talk a little bit about some current stuff, and we're going to reach back to the late 80s when Jim Hewson was working for TSN and broadcasting Montreal Expos games, and very much looking forward to it. Welcome to the program from Hockey Night in Canada, Jim Hewson. How are you?
I'm great. Hello, Jay. Dave, nice to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you as well. I'll have to see you at the pub next time you're in town.
Yeah, well, the CBC group are pretty much regulars there. We're supporting Dave through university or Jay through university.
Yes. Yes, I'm 35 and still struggling my way through that, and I thank all of you, believe me.
You should have a doctorate for the money we spend in there.
You know, if he took more than half a class a semester, he'd probably be there by now. But, you know, keep pushing at it, Jay, and good to know that that's where the Hockey Night in Canada money goes. That's great to know.
It's okay. We're in Quebec. We have nothing to do with it.
And yeah. Here I was thinking
your
it was
is early. Baby needs a new pair of shoes.
And here I was, Jim, thinking that all the money went to Don Cherry's clothing.
Yeah.
So this is that's good stuff right off the top. Now, Jim, first of all, Jimmy, did you give the update on the Canucks game in the last? Did they win tonight? Because I know they were.
I can give the update on that.
Good.
They just finished a 2-1 shootout win over Phoenix. Awful game, but really just a really tight defensive game. Vancouver made a big mistake at the end and coughed up a 1-0 lead that they should have steered home, and then they had to go into a shootout and win it in 6 rounds.
How do you feel about the Canucks this season?
I like them a lot. They've got to an interesting time in their development where they're, you know, I'd really be mad if I was Alain Vigneault and anybody ever asked me the question, do you look at this game as a measuring stick for your team? They're beyond that. They're a regular 100-point team, one of the best teams in the league. Other teams measure themselves against Vancouver. Vancouver doesn't measure themselves against anybody but themselves now. And that's an incredible hurdle that you get across in the National Hockey League. And there's a team like Detroit is like that. They play the same game every night. Throw it on the ice. Doesn't matter whether you get a lead on us. Doesn't matter whether we're behind by a goal. We're going to play the same game, and we're probably going to beat you. And it's a pretty neat way to play the game.
Does the confidence still exist in the city of Vancouver the way it did during the end of the season in the playoff?
Oh, you know
last
what
year?
Fans are like. I mean, they're all over the map. It depends on what happens each day. You know, one day they think they're going to win the Stanley Cup, but I think everybody's still really nervous. Until they actually win, it'll be a very, very, very nervous city.
How much Montreal Canadiens hockey do you get to watch from out there?
I watch it because I broadcast enough of their games. I watch them a lot. I love watching games from the Bell Center, for starters. I love doing games there. And so I keep an eye on all the Canadian teams because I really want to see what's going on. But I broadcast a lot of Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa, so I try and watch them as closely as I can. I must admit tonight I really wanted to see how Washington would play against San Jose. So I watched more of that one, but I did tune in to see that long enough to make me wonder whether I like Jaroslav Spacek better than Thomas Kaberle.
Yeah, I think that was an oft-repeated question in the third period tonight.
Yeah, the Canadians are, well, they are what they are. And in that sense, if they don't have everybody going every night and Carey playing a great game, they don't win. It's just at that point. There's not going to be too many accidents with them where they have a great performance by somebody who's going to drag the whole team and win. They got to have everybody going. And they showed that in a few games lately that they've won. But tonight got a tad loose, I thought.
Just a tad.
Yeah.
I think we'll call it the Valentine's Day Eve heartbreak game for the Montreal Canadiens, at least for their fans.
Yeah, because there's still that slim hope, right? They're clinging to the faint hope clause. And it just doesn't happen very often. You know, they're that far back. one of the things that I always remind people now that when there's 30 games left in the season, you look at your own team and you think, oh, my team's still got a chance because there's 60 points on the table they could grab. But really, there's 90 points on the table because you're playing all those teams around you, and there's all these three-point games. And tonight I could just see people, for example, in Calgary, just being manic depressive over the fact that Phoenix managed to get this game in Vancouver into overtime and get a point that they just had no business getting. But, you know, it's just the three-point game really just thrashes the teams that are chasing because it makes it almost impossible to catch up.
We're in conversation with Hockey Night in Canada's Jim Hewson. Jim, I have a question from a fan on Twitter. Do you mind if I ask you?
Not at all.
Please ask Jim how he got that job for NHL in the video games. His voice was classic on PlayStation.
That was a really neat job. And I got it because, well, I live in Vancouver, and the campus for Electronic Arts in Canada is in Burnaby, not far from where I live. And one time back in 1995... when those video games, it doesn't seem that long ago, but in 1995, they had video games out at Electronic Arts, and they had no play-by-play on them. They had no audio because they didn't have the room, the computer. They just didn't have the space to have anything more than a hello on it. So the first game that I did in 1995, they asked me if I would do introductions to the games, and so I would come on and say, "Welcome to Chicago Stadium for tonight's game between Detroit and Chicago."
I remember.
And that was it. That was the sum total of all of the audio that they could put in the game. So in subsequent years, they expanded it, and it was really kind of a neat project because they had producers who had never, ever done this before. The technology had never been there to put play-by-play on a video game of any kind. And so we worked through it together, like we just sort of looked at it and thought, "Here, how can we do this?" And we eventually over the years recorded all these phrases and tried to have different inflections so that you could stitch them together. And it got better and better to the point where after a while you couldn't tell that the way it was recorded was all of these little three-word sentences, or not really sentences, but fragments that would be stitched together by the computer, the intelligence of the computer, and they would sound like a sentence. And in the early days when we weren't sure how to do it, they were stitched together, and you could tell they were stitched together, you know, because the inflections would all change. But fascinating work and incredibly, incredibly boring. Well, you just imagine yourself sitting in a basement room the size of a telephone booth reading 750 names in three different inflections and then doing he passes to, he receives the pass, and doing all of that stuff about 700 different times in different intonations for first period, second period, third period, late. There were times when I had to leave there just holding my head thinking, "That's it for the day, I'm going to explode." But the finished product was really neat to be a part of.
Well, those inflections and those intonations kept a bunch of kids in a basement in Chamonix-Laval during the late 90s and early 2000s from killing each other from the trash talk playing that game. So, yeah, forget your Gemini Awards, Jim. You should be that should be the defining moment of your career. You've saved many, many lives by calming us with those beautiful inflections.
But I'll tell you, there's a lot of parents of those games who have come to me and said, "I wish you would get the hell out of my house. I hear you day and night. I'm sick of you. My kid won't get off the game."
You know, I got to say, Jay, that's not the iconic moment. And I know you have a bunch of them, and I'm sure if you wouldn't mind sharing a couple. But for me, it's John Slaney.
Yeah.
That was, I was 1991, Saskatoon. I was 10 years old. My parents let me stay up late. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the birth of Canada's passion for junior hockey.
I think it really was. At the time, that was the first year that TSN, who had invested an awful lot into World Junior and Hockey Canada, and they'd really just sort of got this relationship going with Hockey Canada. And 1991 in Saskatoon was the first year they decided to broadcast every game of the World Junior Championship. So, you know, whether it was Finland against the Czech Republic or whatever it was, we did everything on the prairies that year. And I think it was... that to me was the year that really turned it into the television show that it's become. And the World Junior Championship is really a made by TV event, as opposed to made for TV.
Sure.
And that was a great year, and Canada won it. It was Sandis Oslynch who turned the puck over behind the net, and he went on to have a pretty good career. And who was it? Kent Manderville.
Jumped in his arms afterwards,
Kent,
I believe.
Kent Manderville from Victoria, B.C., sent the puck up the boards to John Slaney from St. John's, Newfoundland. It was a cross-Canada goal, and it ended in Canada won gold, and that launched what has been one of the most successful television investments in Canadian hockey history.
There was a junior All-Star game played at the Montreal Forum a little later that year, and I believe it was only played at the Forum because Eric Lindros, who was an Oshawa General at the time, was playing in the game. It was an OHL versus QMJHL All-Star game, and I was standing in the Forum in the hallway about to buy a hot dog, and there walks John Slaney. And I swear to you, Jim, I've never been more excited to meet an athlete. At that time, he was a big deal. That goal was really something, and it's amazing to see how far that tournament's come.
Yeah, and it was there were great rosters in that tournament too. Pavel Bure was playing for Russia that year.
Wow.
Canada had just a wonderful star-studded team, but it was really neat to see how that was accepted in Saskatoon and what the World Junior Championship has become. And John Slaney was such a good guy too. You know, John became a favorite of mine to visit with over the years when he was playing in the National Hockey League because of that moment. And then Newfoundland had some big moments. I think Dwayne Norris was the guy who won the tournament the year before, or 2 years before that. There's always been good Newfs in that tournament.
I believe that Slaney is now playing in the Czech League, or at least he was last year.
Always a great skater and a guy who could move the puck. So he'd be close to 40 now, wouldn't he? Or mid to late 30s. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's still playing real well.
Jim, will you talk a little bit about your days covering the Expos?
Yeah, it was those were really neat days. I had 2 years and a little bit in the late 80s before I moved over into the Blue Jays, where I was I got a chance to do it. And one of the really neat things was they gave me an opportunity at TSN to broadcast baseball because to a lot of people, even people that I worked with and who were in the industry, thought that since I'd never broadcast baseball before, I couldn't possibly know anything about it. But I'd been a fan and I'd followed the game and I really wanted to give it a try. And as it turned out, those were two really good years. Teams that should have been a heck of a lot better. I think both years they were 500, 81-81. And they should have been better, especially the 1989 team when they got Mark Langston. That team, they should have won. And for whatever reason, they fell apart in September after, I think, leading from June till almost the 1st of September. But it was really neat. I got a chance to work with Kenny Singleton, who has become a great friend and was really helpful. And it was the Expos were a really good bunch of guys. Buck Rogers was the manager, and he was really nice to me. He was really good and answering my questions, helping me along, and I mean, just think about the guys who were on that team. You couldn't go wrong with some of the people who were around in those days. I'm just trying to think back who was there. Casey Kendall, I remember. Andres Galarraga, one of the nicest men in baseball.
Tim Raines was still there.
Rock was still playing in the outfield at that point with Dave Martinez and Hubie Brooks.
That's right.
And
that's
Hubie, right. Hubie was a real special guy. There was Spike Owen. So let me go around the infield. Let's see. There would have been Mike Fitzgerald was catching.
Yeah.
Pretty famous third baseman.
Yeah. Eli was still there. Tim Wallace was still playing. But Fitzgerald was catching. Nelson Santavena was his backup. He was a really good guy. Andres Galarraga at first. I think Damo Garcia played most of the games at second base, although Rex Sudler played some. Spike Owen at short. And Tim Wallach at third. And the interesting guy on that team, too, for me anyway, was Jeff Hewson, who was the backup infielder.
No relation.
no relation, and spelled the name differently.
Yes,
but
it is.
This running joke, I used to get stuff sent to my room all the time. or get calls in my room for Jeff. Nothing that was ever untoward.
No, of course not. These are baseball players in the late 80s. Come on.
So if you think about all those guys, if you're an Expos fan and you remember that team, I mean, those are just not only were they good players, but really good people.
One name that we're leaving off, Jim, that was in the news last week was Oil Can Boyd.
Yeah.
I'd imagine there was no real surprise there, huh?
No, I guess not. I'm just trying to remember how involved he was at that time. I remember those days, his his being around there very briefly.
Yeah, it was tail end of his career.
Yeah, no kidding. But the other guys, too, on that team were their pitching staff. A lot of good guys they had there.
Sure, yeah. Dennis Martinez and
Bryn Smith.
Presidente was there. Bryn Smith was there. Pascual Perez. What an interesting guy he was. And Mark Langston came over for Randy Johnson in the middle of the early in the season, actually, because I think Mark had more wins there than he did in Seattle. And then in the bullpen, you had Joe Hesketh and closed with Tim Burke.
Wow, that was a great pitching staff.
So they should have been a lot better. And you know, the whole summer of 89 was spent with, I think people thought that they could win. And then they ended up 81-81, the same as they had the year before.
I blame Mike Fitzgerald and Nelson Santavania.
Why would you blame them?
I'm just joking.
And don't forget, one of the best bench guys at the time, Otis Nixon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Otis just burst onto the scene, and boy, just flat out fly, huh? He was an interesting guy. And he'd had an interesting path to get there, not only in baseball, but in his life. And it was a perfect scenario for him because you couldn't pick a better guy to play for than Buck Rogers, because he didn't care what had happened in the past. It was just, let's play ball. And Otis could just run a million miles an hour.
And then you left from the Expos. TSN brought you over to the Blue Jays. And
what timing was that?
Yeah,
huh?
For real.
I mean, he's talked about lineups. There was
WAMCO.
WAMCO, 92 and 93 were just two of the most fantastic years you could ever have in my industry as a broadcaster, because you don't get an opportunity very often to be there every day and watch a team, two teams like that. There were different teams. I mean, I kind of like the 93 one better, because in 92, I appreciated how good they were, but I wasn't as big a fan of, say, Jack Morris and Dave Winfield as I was the guys who played the year before or the next year. But just, can you think of a lineup anywhere in baseball that's like WAMCO right now?
Right
had,
now, no, not at all.
Yeah, Devon White would lead off, and if he got on base, and he often did, then he was such a threat to steal. It was almost automatic that he would steal second base. Robbie Alomar at that time was one of the best hitters in baseball from both sides of the plate, who could do everything. He could move a runner along. He could bring a run in with a sacrifice fly. He could hit the ball out of the park. He could pretty much do everything. Then one of the most professional hitters in the game in Paul Molitor, who I think from all the discussions I had with him, I think he knew what pitchers were going to do before they did. He thought the game like a pitcher. He didn't think like a hitter. He thought as a pitcher. And that's why he was such a good hitter.
Wow.
Joe Carter, this is like overkill. Because if those first three couldn't bring in a run, and they manufactured a million of them, and Carter, as the cleanup guy, he was the guy who would get you the runs early in the ball game. Like he would hit the two or three run when you were accumulating runs early in the game. Joe would hit one out and get his three RBIs. How the heck did John Olerud hit as much as he did when he was hitting behind and driving so many runs when he was hitting behind Joe Carter?
Wow.
And all those other guys? But he was a spectacular player. So WAMCO, they were never out of a ball game. Even in the late going, you knew that if they could get to the top of that order, they'd score runs, and they did on so many nights. And then the other thing about them was that those were, in those days, pardon me for prattling on here, but I love this stuff.
Oh, no, great.
Listen, we're just enjoying sitting back and letting you go.
Those were seven-inning ball games, because if you didn't beat the Toronto Blue Jays in the first seven innings, in 92, you had to face Warden Henke in the eighth and ninth. And seldom did anybody come back. So it was a seven-inning ball game. It was perfect for the starters. And then the next year, when Ward moved in as the closer, they had Danny Cox. And it wasn't quite the same, but it was pretty close. So those are two pretty special teams. So all in all, I mean, the move over to the American League, I always liked the National League before that. I'd always been a big Dodger fan as a kid. And I loved watching the Expos, and I loved being a part of that and going to those games. But there couldn't have been a better time to move into the American Hockey or the American League and start watching a great team like the Blue Jays in the early 90s.
We're finishing up with Hockey Night in Canada's Jim Houston, but you wouldn't know that he was from Hockey Night in Canada the way we're going on about baseball. It sounds like you really miss it.
Oh, I still love doing it. I got a chance to come back when CBC got back into baseball a few years ago, and absolutely loved it. it's such a different sport to do. It's such a conversational sport for a broadcaster. And, the situations are all really interesting. So I still watch a ton of it, and I listen to a lot of it. I love it. The baseball, one of the wonderful things about baseball is whether, you're out camping or up at the lake or you're, around the house, it can be on in the background all the time. And it's a wonderful backdrop for a summer day. And so it still always is for me, and I would never rule out doing some of it again.
Jim, before we let you go, we forgot about a couple of rookies on that 89 Expos team, one from around the corner from you in Maple Ridge, B.C.
Oh, yeah.
And the other one would be Marquise Grissom.
Yeah, Marquise Grissom was a pretty special. I was trying to think of the other. There was some other guys on that team. Brian Holman and Gene Harris were pretty good young players on that team, too.
And thank goodness for Zane Smith, because without him, the Expos would have never gotten Moises Alou from the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah. Larry Walker turned out to be a pretty good player, didn't he?
Oh, he sure
was. He was one of the first guys. I don't remember many guys who could throw a guy out at first base on a base hit to right field.
Yeah, Montrealers were pretty lucky to see Walker do it, to see, Vladdy did it for sure.
Vladdy Guerrero threw out a few guys at first base. We were at first base. We were blessed with some right fielders with some cannons back in those days. So
no kid, just think of all the outfielders that played for the Expos.
We were blessed
with some real good ones.
Jim, this was so much fun. I really hope we can do it again.
All right, it's really been my pleasure. I like taking a walk down memory lane.
Good.
I'm amazed that I remember even some of this stuff.
Doors always open to you, and thank you for your time. I know you have a lot of fans here. They all just popped out on Twitter and waxed nostalgic not only about baseball, but again, about the video games. That's really something.
Are you going to get on Twitter there, Jim?
You know what? I have a Twitter account, but only so that I can find out what you guys are saying.
Okay.
I haven't sent one yet.
Well, if you do, we'll be following and paying attention.
But it's way too addictive.
It's a little addictive.
And as one of my friends once said, don't ever get a Twitter account until they put a breathalyzer on it.
I think those are words to live by. Jim Houston from Hockey Night in Canada, thank you so much for your time tonight.
You're most welcome. I enjoyed it. See you later, guys.
There he goes. Jim Houston.
Yeah, he's just he's a good guy, and I see him often downtown, and he's a very knowledgeable man, as you can see. He's been everywhere.
Jay, I want to thank you for your CBC Sports connections.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
I'm very impressed by it. I don't think I have any CBC Sports connections outside of you. I have a few CBC connections, it seems. It's was quite an interesting week.
Yeah, I think you're about to do what you're about to do, it was an incredible thrill last week when I first heard it.
We were on air when this happened, but boy, when we heard it, we almost went through the roof.
So here we are at the beginning of a new week. What we do is we do the show Monday through Thursday, as you know, and on Friday is the best of. On this past Friday, the Brian Burke interview we did ran again. Tons of Twitter reaction. The conversation we had with Brian about the idea of a gay player coming out in the National Hockey League. He said it was only a matter of time until there's an openly gay NHLer. I know after this show is over tonight on TSN Radio in Montreal, so either you have the app or you're in Montreal, and it's 9:90 a.m., Dave Kaufman's going to have a conversation with Richard Burnett on that very topic. I believe Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace will also be on.
Thank you, George. We greatly appreciate all of the support and help that we get from all over. Steph Darwish, thank you as well for the wonderful plug this week. Did not expect to be hearing that plug there. Same with that one. It's pretty cool. People seem to be into this.
We on TV, DK.
Jay, one thing we have not done yet much is talk, you and I. We've been pretty busy.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that.
Well, it's Jim Houston, for God's sake.
It's and Joel Plaskett and Translaureate and Chad Cordero. Where has the time gone? We've already been on for an hour and a half. Amazing. Having fun?
Of course.
Good. Me too. This is The Kaufman Show. Will you like our damn Facebook page already?
Let's get it up to 500 people. Let's go.
If we get it up to 500, I will give away a pair of Habs tickets.
Wow.
Yep.
Wish I can click it a few more hundred times.
This is The Kaufman Show. When we come back, we will give away a $50 gift certificate to Brewtopia. But not for nothing. You gotta bring it.
You gotta earn it.
Happy Valentine's Day.
shotgun shack to the Superdome.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show, where we take care of our own. How good was that, opening off the Grammys last night? Bruce in his full glory.
I didn't watch the Grammys.
That's okay.
It's okay. Do you forgive me?
Yeah.
I didn't know Bruce was on. I would have tuned in, though.
Bruce was on at the start. He opened the show, played his new single. Very excited to see him in concert. They just announced that the big man, rest in peace, big man, his nephew, Nick, I believe it is, will be taking over as the new saxophonist in the E Street Band.
So you've been asking this question for a long time, so you finally have your answer about what they're going to do. Why? Who better than someone who's related to him?
Exactly.
At least he's got the same genes.
That's right. And
right.
I'd imagine that if the boss approves, then it's going to be pretty awesome down at Madison Square Garden on April 9th. And that is a Monday night, so I won't be here. Jay, I have handpicked a host, and you two will be doing the show together.
Okay.
I will let you know afterwards.
And, okay.
I think you'll all be very excited by this very special guest host.
Okay, so it's got to be somebody who's better than me, obviously.
It's somebody
I'm just here to, you know, trash talk, so.
Yeah. we'll make that announcement in due time. But,
cool.
Needless to say, I think that everybody will be very excited. Let's take some phone calls, because we haven't done that yet, and that's something that we're good at. 514-790-0990. Maybe people are a little called out after the post-game show.
Yeah, well, it was quite dramatic during that hour and a half. So I was listening to some of the calls, and people were a little bit upset.
All the angry
time,
people.
Yeah, well, what else is new, right?
Yeah,
it's been a tough season.
You know, when they take your hopes and then dash them like so many paper beer cups.
Oh,
right?
So frustrating.
1-866-896-2546. And, I have a trivia question.
For me?
For a $50 gift certificate to Brewtopia.
At the Brew.
Yes,
all right,
sir.
Let's do it.
I want to thank Brewtopia for jumping on board with the Kaufman Show. And we're going to make it easy tonight. We had a guest on. Our first guest of the evening was Chad Cordero. Chad Cordero is a graduate of Cal State Fullerton. His number is retired there. Name me the other expos. Numbers retired at Cal State Fullerton. 514-790-0990. Hint, his name came up tonight.
Okay.
Yes.
I know who you're talking about.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Do I get the gift certificates?
If we go through the phone lines
and nobody gets them,
then you can.
I get them?
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
But you've got to take me there and...
Yeah, I'll take
lavish
you there.
Me with
it's a great place.
Honey beer.
Yeah.
One of the best live bars in the city for music. They make their own beer there as well. And watched the Hellbound Hepcats there on Friday night. It was fantastic.
That's a perfect bar band name, isn't it?
They were super. They had that sort of swing kind of feel to it. And the crowd was just, you should have seen the girls dancing, Jay. It was pretty awesome. Let's go to the phones. 514. Happy Valentine's Day, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you.
790-0990. Mike in St. Leonard. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Great. How you doing, man?
Good, good, good. I just want to take a guess at the Caltech graduate.
Go for it.
Tim Wallach?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Got it. Well done. And nice on the triangle there, Jimmy.
is it lunchtime or something? What was that?
Well done, Mike. You have no problem coming down to the station picking him up?
Sure.
All right. They're good for the next 3 months. Two $25 gift certificates. Jimmy will take your information, and we will slide them under the door for the promotions office, and you can come get them anytime after, 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Thanks, man.
See you down at the pub.
You bet.
Well, look, maybe that was too easy, eh?
Well, it didn't take us too long, did it?
Wait till next week. Yeah. I'm going to blow everybody away with some Simpsons trivia.
Thanks a lot, Mike, for stealing my gift certificates.
Back to the phones, Jimmy. Oh, just put him through, whoever it is. Let's just do it. You know, got to have some confidence, right? We trust our listeners.
You sure about that?
Yes. Hello. Oh, no. You got to turn your radio down, please.
Hello.
Hello. Turn the radio off, please.
I'm trying to. It's on the internet.
Oh.
Just rip the plug out of the wall. Come on.
There we go.
Kick your modem.
That's my modem.
Who is this?
This is Steve from Redondo.
Hey, it's Expo. I thought I recognized you. How are you?
Sorry about that. You got me on real fast. Eli's the answer.
He is, and the guy before you got it, but...
I didn't hear that, but I've got an Eli Cal State Fullerton story to tell you.
Oh, cool.
Was it 1980, I think? That was his first at-bat. He got a walk, and then he hit home run in his next at-bat. And, of course, I wasn't able to listen to Expo games at the time because I was in Los Angeles. I happened to be in Fullerton at the time he hit the home run. And on the local radio broadcast, the guy came on and was very, very excited. And he said that local Cal State Fullerton guy, Tim Wallach, hit a home run in his first official major league at bat.
Local boy done good, huh?
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting. Also, I heard you get on Mike Fitzgerald a little.
Very little.
I know. I happened to meet him at the Redondo Beach Cafe a few weeks ago.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, a really nice guy.
Oh, that's awesome.
And another guy that I had lunch with at the Redondo Beach Cafe was Larry Parrish. And here's a quick Larry Parrish / baseball story. I sat down with him and I said, Larry, in 1979, I was in Southern California and I went to a game in San Diego. And I said, the three hardest hit balls I've ever seen in my life, number three was Archie Cianfrancco. Number one, of course, was Willie Stargell. And I said, you were the second one in San Diego. I said, I think you hit a triple. And he absolutely remembered everything about that at-bat. He said it was to right center. He said, I hardly hit any triples. It was a double. And then he gave me the pitch count. But that was an unbelievable shot.
Steve, did you hear our interview with Chad Cordero?
No, I missed it.
You'll have to go to either iTunes tomorrow or thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. But I think you'll be very impressed. He has an incredible memory for every little detail of the end of 03 and the 04 season. And we had him on for over 20 minutes, and it was really just a fantastic conversation.
Well, I will definitely check that out. And thanks for having me on the air again.
Our pleasure. Happy to do a sports show for you, Steve.
Yes, I assume you talked a lot of sports tonight with the Habs losing. Actually, I watched the game, and it was a devastating loss.
I'll tell you what, they've only come up peripherally. It gets talked about so much around here that we want to try and bring something else out. And if it's going to be from midnight onward or 11 p.m. onward on a Monday, then let's get those Expo stories out. Let's talk about the big picture issues in sports, and everybody else can complain about Scott Gomez. I kind of like him.
I'm with you on that. Also, a suggestion, which it seems like you're doing. Wouldn't it be great to have a former Expo on every week or, 2 weeks? There's many of them that are on Twitter, and they all seem to enjoy talking to you or talking about Montreal. I know Larry Parrish, for example, he said he loved his time in Montreal.
Yeah, well, if you can keep them at the Redondo Beach Cafe, if you can get them in for me, then I'll be more than happy to. Next time you see Mike Fitzgerald, pass him my email address.
I will do that.
Tell him save the expos at hotmail.com.
Will do.
They always find that endearing. I don't know why.
I wonder why.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Have a great night.
You too. Bye.
I like that he calls every week from California.
Yes, he does. It's great to hear from people all over North America, which we have quite a wide expansion of listeners.
We do. I think about the Travis, the polemicist, a huge Habs fan who listens in North Carolina.
Right.
And, we've got our buddy John in Denver.
Yeah.
And for a super Canadian show, because that's sort of how I plan it out in my head. I think this is a pretty Canadian show.
Let's make it super Canadian. I've got a question for you.
Yeah, man.
The hardest ball you ever saw hit at Olympic Stadium.
Guerrero, the one that that hit the placard there where they put up the Vlad 520 or whatever it was.
Okay.
507 or something.
The one where Roger bursted his vocal cords after he saw it. He just screamed. Roger Brulette just screamed. He didn't even call it.
Well, I was in my seats when it happened.
Okay.
And
I wasn't there for that one.
I'm trying to think. The sound of Mark McGwire, the bat hitting the ball, was something fierce.
Right.
I don't even know how to explain it, but that sound was, I can close my eyes and go back to the Olympic Stadium and hear that sound.
Yeah. Well, it echoed, in that big cavernous toilet bowl. I mean, everything echoed, especially the horns. And boy, it's a good thing that I never held a World Cup there with the, what are they called? The horns from
South Africa.
The vuvuzela.
Yeah. They did have the FIFA Under 20 World Cup there.
That's right.
And that was actually one of the few times that I've enjoyed myself at the Olympic Stadium since the Expos left.
Okay.
I went to see a Mexico versus, some African country. I can't remember. Fantastic. Just the atmosphere was unbelievable.
Hardest ball I ever saw hit there?
Yeah.
Gary Sheffield.
Playing with the Marlins.
What a terrifying hitter Gary Sheffield was.
Especially because the way that the third baseline was where the seats came down right into foul territory, almost touching the third base coach. And it was just so dangerous. Killer Alley, they used to call it. And this wasn't even a home run. This was a foul ball. Well, Dave, 17 people died that day because I really thought somebody was killed. It was incredible how hard he hit the ball.
The only time I ever almost got killed by a foul ball, and the conversation actually came up this week on Twitter. Do you remember when Brad Wilkerson hit for the natural cycle on St. Jean-Baptiste Day?
I do. Okay. I do.
Afternoon game, was there with my buddy Mike and both of our dads. I think it was a late Father's Day thing. And we all played hooky for the afternoon and got some killer seats. I believe that it was Expos Pirates. And we sat two rows up behind the Pirates dugout. Some point in the game, there was a screaming foul ball that missed my nose by, I swear to God, Jay, like an inch.
How is that possible?
It just whoosh right by me. And the guy at the end of the row, it was my dad, me, Mike, and Steve, Mike's dad. And then the guy that was sitting beside Steve just reaches his left arm out, baseball glove in hand, catches the ball. Never saw it, Jay. I never would have known. And it would have sucked because I would have missed Wilkerson's cycle. It happened before.
I would have messed up that purdy nose of yours.
My mom always said, protect the face.
Not in the face. Not in the face.
Jimmy, is the did you figure out that, because I want to give it a mention if we didn't get the song working. We're trying to play some Jimmy Riggers for you here. Very excited. Big Jimmy Riggers concert, Opatrovice, on the 18th. I don't know if we're going to get it or not, but we're going to keep working on it. The computer is messing up. Otherwise, go to thejimmyriggers.com. Check them out on Google. They're awesome. Check them out this weekend. I will be at the show on the 18th. And we're very much looking forward to having the Jimmy Riggers in studio with us in the month of March as well. That's right. We're starting to plan stuff out in advance right now, Jay.
Wow.
I know.
Not this morning?
No.
Okay, good.
No. That was very October and Balls of the Baseball
it
show.
It seems to help the flow of the show. It's something Dave and I discovered last week. You know, if we actually plan this thing out, we may have something here.
I think we've been doing it for a little longer than
yes, we have.
Yes, Travis, the Impact are going to play a few games at the Big O while the stadium is being configured. I believe that they're going to play a couple a year as well. Mike Wendt, listening down in Boston, good friend of the show. Bruce opened and closed with Sir Paul, giving you great bread and an otherwise beep sandwich. But it was fun to mock the meat. That end, Mike, with the Golden Slumbers medley. Wow. Paul McCartney and the full band, the same band that you all saw at the Bell Center. And that
I saw people tweeting about that, and actually that's one part of the show that I wish I had seen, because that is probably my favorite Beatles song.
Yeah, well, I get that. It's a pretty awesome song.
It kind of shows where they would have gone in the 70s had they continued together.
Oh, wouldn't that?
It was opening something, a whole new level of rock and roll.
And then to hear Bruce jamming with Paul on the end of it, woof, that was something else. We got some Jimmy Riggers here. All right, let's pump it up, and we'll go to break. Jimmy Riggers, February 18th. Get your tickets, Opatrovice. This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We will be right back. That's right. We're back. Here it is. It's Kiss Cam. I said I'm playing this every week. My buddies, the Arkells. City. Welcome back, everybody. Jay, I want to keep going. We're not ending at 2.
Okay.
All right.
I got nowhere to be.
Think anybody wants to call in and talk with us?
I'm sure somebody does, and I'm sure somebody will. Yeah. It is Valentine's Day, so I really have nowhere to go. It's also known in my house as Black Tuesday. So, never mind.
Oh, I have a joke, but I'm going to just keep it to myself. I got to say, I think Valentine's Day is being celebrated for me right now as well.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, this is Valentine's Day.
Why are you staring at me like that?
Because you're my co-host.
Okay.
We need to keep eye contact
let's
in order
keep
to
it,
know.
Let's keep it that way.
In order to know who should talk, and that way we don't talk over each other.
Which we do anyway, so it doesn't matter.
From time to time. I hope you've all enjoyed the show tonight. It's been a very busy show tonight. Chad Cordero, that was really neat.
He surprised me in a lot of ways. His memory is impeccable. I mean, the slightest things that he remembers. But you know what? It's always your first year that you remember the most. When you're coming up and you're just hitting the major league, everything has to be so vivid for him, you know, every step of the way.
Man, can you picture that clubhouse? Walking in the day after Rocky Biddle blows that save against the Marlins.
Galarraga yelling at everybody.
I don't know what that would have been like. For a 20-year-old kid. The team literally just had the highest high of the season of that 4-game sweep of the Phillies at home, with the crowds finally showing up. And then they go down to Florida full of momentum, have the game in their hands and blow it. And then the next day, Chad Cordero's the call-up. And I'm guilty of it too, I've often said the Expos weren't allowed any call-ups and MLB really screwed the Expos. They were allowed to call up. Chad Cordero was called up. He made the jump from single A. He was drafted that year in the first round, and he's the first Expo to have ever done that, to make that big a jump in that quick a period of time.
And how sad is that, though? I mean, what does that say about how Major League Baseball, as owners of the Expos at the time, I mean, was it sabotage? Was it?
Listen, all of y'all.
Come on. I mean, let's be honest about
what. Can't stand it. I know you planned it. I'm going to set it straight, this Watergate. No, yeah. Come on. Really?
Yeah, of course. Why not? Well, where was Termell Sledge?
Edmonton.
Yeah.
And really, when Termell Sledge came up, was he that big of a difference maker? He was killing it in the PCL that year. I think he hit 30 home runs. But we all know that Termell Sledge was a 4A player.
But that's not the
point.
Too
good for AAA, not good enough for the Major.
Think about it, that you've got guys in the locker room. You got guys like Bartolo Colon and Andrés Galarraga.
Colon was gone. That was
02.
I think you're 02-ing it now.
No, even Galarraga is sure, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking 03.
Yeah, 03 was believer fever.
Yeah. You've got Vladdy, and you've got, you had your share of veterans in the room. How would you feel when you've got guys in AAA who have had some experience, who have been in the show before, and they just refuse to bring these guys up, and you're making a wild card run, a legitimate wild card run, and you can't touch these guys? How would you feel? I'd snub, as nice a guy he is, I'd snub Chad Cordero too. And screw you, kid.
No, I think it shows, you know, he mentioned Joey Eishen, he mentioned Jamie Carroll, and who was the other? There was one more. Oh, and Todd Zeal.
Todd Zeal, yeah. Yeah, but Joey Eishen and Todd Zeal were just cool guys all around anyway, remember.
But
you know?
Joey Eishen and Todd Zeal were the two veterans on that team at the time. Todd Zeal was brought in, and if you'll all remember, the deal for Todd Zeal was a huge, huge deal in Montreal.
The deal for Todd
the
Zeal.
The deal for Zeal. Todd Zeal was the biggest third baseman to play for the Expos since Tim Wallach left. There's the third time today that Tim Wallach gets mentioned on the show.
Biggest in stature or in
name?
Well, I don't know. Well, I mean, Sean Barry had a couple of good years.
Shane Andrews?
Fernando Tatis?
Right. Okay, so I think I made my point. The only problem is Zeal was as good as Tim Wallach when Tim Wallach was playing. So the deal was about 10 years too late.
Yeah, Zeal was at the tail end of his career, and you could see it. He had slowed down a lot.
He did get to pitch, though.
Yes, he did.
I remember watching him pitch in a game against the Mets, an absolute blowout of a game.
The twilight of the Expos just...
Needless to say, it really warmed my heart to hear Chad Cordero speak that way about Jamie Carroll, who is my favorite Expo from the end of the Expos.
Jamie Carroll, huh?
Love him. Okay. Love him. I will... I'm sure I've told it before, but I will tell the story again one day of me seeing Jamie Carroll's first professional major league game on September 11th, 2002 at Wrigley Field in Chicago, and saw him go 3-for-5 with a triple in his major league debut. From that moment on, I was a big Jamie Carroll fan.
Okay.
And every little anecdote I've heard since, including tonight's from Chad Cordero, reaffirms it. So, yeah, pretty awesome. Want to congratulate our good friends of the show, Arkells, on their 2 Juno nominations.
I thought they won a Grammy last night. I said, wow.
They should have won a Grammy
They'll never be on our show.
What do you mean? We'll have a Grammy winner.
Yeah, well, we have a 5-time Gemini winner tonight.
And we had a Juno winner tonight as well.
That's correct.
Mr. Plaskett.
That's right.
We had a National League All-Star in Chad Cordero.
Mm-hmm.
We're killing this. Wait till you hear what I have in store for next week. That's the teaser for now. We'll bring it up a bit. There's a huge, huge anniversary coming up next week. If you're so inclined as I am, let's go back to the phones. 514-790-0990. Mark in Montreal. Welcome to the Kaufman Show.
Hi.
How are you?
Hey. Who outplayed Lindros?
What?
Yannick Perreault. He had a good game that day, right?
Which day was this?
I think. You know what, Jimmy? Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's see where this goes. Mark, what are you talking about?
What? The game? The All-Star game against the Q against the OHL.
Oh, my God. Yes, Yannick Perreault did have a good game. And you know what? I remember Lindros was a non-factor in that game. My big memory from that was seeing Gord Miller before the game sitting in the seats. And then John Slaney. I had a run-in with Patrick Waugh at that game. Patrick Waugh, if you remember, had a broken leg at the time. He had broken his leg playing against the Maple Leafs.
Okay.
And Patrick was out, and the team, I imagine, suffered because of it. But I met Patrick Waugh and got Patrick Waugh's autograph. I had a hockey puck that I'd gotten from the practice there, and then I had a gold pen. So it like a gold marker kind of pen. And I see Patrick Waugh, and he sort of waves me over to this corner in the forum. You know, it was all tunnels on the ground floor. And he signs my hockey puck for me.
Wow.
And I look at him and I go, gee, thanks, Mr. Waugh. Bless you, Jimmy. And I tell a story, Jimmy sneezes.
Yeah.
He must be allergic to my wit or something.
I think it's every time you talk about Patrick Waugh. But anyway, go on.
I rub my thumb over the autograph as I say, gee, thanks, Mr. Waugh, as a little kid that I am. And I rub my thumb over the autograph and the autograph comes off on my thumb.
No.
It totally smudges off. He looks at me. He starts laughing. He grabs the puck back and he signs the other side. I'll have to show you sometime, Jay. I have 2 Patrick Waugh autographs on the same puck, one smudged, one legit.
I remember he wasn't signing any autographs during the 93 parade. We were throwing our jerseys.
Well, how
up.
Many people? I mean, well, he's going to sign 250,000 autographs.
All the rest of the guys were.
Really?
Yeah, I have a framed jersey with most of the names of the Canadians from that team. And I think he had some sort of a deal with Upper Deck where he couldn't sign anything without it being confirmed or having some sort of certificate on it.
I don't recall that. I remember Patrick being nothing but really cool. And I mean, that was a great, that's my Patrick Waugh story.
Sorry to ruin Patrick Waugh for you. No, I don't hold it against the guy. Contract's a contract, whatever. But that's all I remember.
I missed the parade.
You missed the parade?
Yeah, I had my grade 6 graduation that day. I missed, I also missed the Desjardins game. We had a school play that night. I was the very model of a modern major general. I had information, vegetable, animal, and mineral.
I saw every single one, including the ones that they broadcasted live from the forum.
I was in the building for Game 5.
Yeah, I know.
Face value of the ticket, $52. Did you see the interview this week with the mistress?
Mistress?
Yeah.
Of who? John Kennedy?
Uh-huh.
She's still alive?
She has a book out. It's easy to be alive. She was only 19 or something when it
that a
started.
Boy. That a boy, Johnny K.
Oh, my.
Well, whatever. Who cares? He's the president, man.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, Jackie, John, Caroline, come on. It's a terrible story, honestly.
Yeah, why do we even bring it up?
It was because you mentioned JFK's assassination. So.
Well, listen, Caroline's the only one left anyways, and I'm sure she's not listening. So.
To be fair, I went there right with you by saying how Cronkite of Jimmy it was.
Yes.
Let's go to the phones, and it's our buddy George out in God's country, St. Lazar. Good evening, my friend.
Francis Ford Coppola speaking.
That's right. How are you, sir?
How's it going?
We're great.
You started off late. I was tuned in at 11 waiting for the Kaufman show, and I kept on dragging about the Habs. You know what? I've had Habs burnout. I said, where's Kaufman?
Well, thank God you haven't had Expos burnout, or you would have changed the channel a long time ago.
No. I can never get enough of the Expo talk, that's for sure.
Oh, good.
But I'll tell you one thing. You guys are moving up in the standings there because what? You got Jim Houston. You had...
Joe Plackett,
exactly. Chad Cordero, you know, this is the big time now.
Well, thank you, George. Thank you for noticing. We are doing our best. Jay and I are working hard
all the time.
We're working hard every week to bring you guys the best damn radio we can. So we'll keep at it.
I just wanted to share a story with you concerning the 1993 Stanley Cup parade.
Oh, please go ahead. Tell me what I missed.
My son was like 6 years old at the time, so I decided that I was going to take him to the parade and let him experience what I've experienced for many, many years. And I don't know, for some strange reason, I had this thought in my mind. I said, what happens if the 93 Stanley Cup is the last Stanley Cup parade I ever get to attend? So I said, okay, we're going to go there for sure. So obviously, the parade was a little bit disappointing because of the rioting and everything that had happened. They had these big trucks, and they just basically just went through the streets. It wasn't like 86 when they had the open convertibles, and, you know, the fans could really touch the players and stuff like that. So that was a little bit disappointing. Anyway, everybody who ever knew me knew that I was a huge, big Habs fan. And I used to have this bakery in Ville Saint-Laurent. And so after the parade, my six-year-old son and I entered the parking lot over there, and my son had a flag. And he's waving, and there's like about five or six of my friends waiting outside the store. And here I am. I come in there, and I honk my horn, and I go, go, Habs, go, go, Habs, go. And there I am sitting, chatting with my friends, and then all of a sudden, this police officer comes over to my car. And he said, driver's license and registration, please. I said, I'm sorry? He said, driver's license and registration. I said, is there something wrong, officer? Driver's license and registration. So I give him my driver's license and registration, comes back and gives me a ticket for $100 because I used my horn unnecessarily.
Kings fan?
And so at this point in time, I'm absolutely furious, and I said, I'm going to see you in court. So about 6 to 8 months later, I find myself contesting this ticket in Palais de Justice in Ville Saint-Laurent. So here I am in front of pleading my case in front of the judge, and I said, I'm sorry, but does the law apply to everyone, or does it apply only to me? That's because I said, I see cars honking their horns when there's a wedding procession, and I don't see police officers giving them tickets. I see cars going through red lights during a funeral procession. I don't see police officers giving tickets. This was an afternoon after the parade. I came into a private parking lot. I hung my horn 3-4 times out of celebration that the Canadians won the Stanley Cup. And here I am. I got a $100 ticket, and I can't understand that. And then the judge turns around and says to me, did you honk your horn, yes or no? I said, yes. So he says, guilty. Under the circumstances, though, I'm not going to let you pay the extra court costs. So to end my conversation, I told around and I said, Your Honor, can I say something in closing? He says, absolutely. I said, Your Honor, it's obvious to me that you're an Ordix fan.
Well, if that judge is still with us, maybe he can be a happy man again in a couple of years, huh, George?
Maybe that was Mark from Montreal.
By the way, Jay, I'm telling you, that jam session last night with Paul McCartney and the boys and Grohl from the Foo Fighters and
Joe Walsh.
Racing Joe Walsh. That was an amazing jam. And I've got that PBR, so if I can get that on a CD for you, I'll pass it along.
I think it's on YouTube as well, George, so I'm sure it's out there.
It was amazing, amazing.
What did you think of, did you watch the whole telecast?
I watched about probably all of it. A couple of parts I didn't really get into.
Yeah, like Nicki Minaj?
Exactly, absolutely. I just turned her off right there. You know, I can't get into that kind of scene, you know. I like performers, and the funny thing is that here I am, and I'm reading Twitter, and Who's Paul McCartney was trending.
Oh, my goodness. I know. Honestly, I was not impressed with McCartney's Hold on. Let me just make it clear here. I love Paul McCartney, and the Golden Slumbers medley was amazing. Paul McCartney doing the standards, Rod Stewart already did that, and frankly, I could live without that. I don't need Paul McCartney doing that. I need Paul McCartney doing the woos and the he's and the oh darling.
And a 17-minute Hey Jude rendition. That's what we want to see.
That's what I want to see. Yeah, I don't need Paul McCartney doing the classics.
Agree with you. I was at the Bell Center for the second concert that he was this past summer. And what I said, you know what? You youngsters should take a note of this guy, because here we are. We had a 68-year-old guy doing a three-hour set, okay? Didn't even take the break. The band took a break, but he didn't take a break.
Two longest shows I've been to, George. Bruce Springsteen, the E Street Band, and Paul McCartney.
Well, I'll tell you something, Dave. I'm hoping that the boss is going to come to Montreal this summer. And for sure, if the boss comes to Montreal, Dave Kaufman and George from St. Lazare are going to hook up for the concert.
Oh, we're going to have a big Kaufman show party when there's a Springsteen show.
Absolutely.
I promise you. We're all going to meet down at Brutopia and celebrate afterwards.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure listening to you. Keep up the great work, and I'll be looking forward to next week.
Sorry about the groggy Tuesday, George.
No problem.
One day we're going to get that trending on Twitter, Jay.
What's that?
Groggy Tuesdays.
Groggy? No, it's Black Tuesday.
Well, no,
oh,
that's,
no, I was talking about Valentine's Day. Sorry, yeah, Groggy Tuesday.
No, if you're calling Valentine's Day Groggy Tuesday, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, well, is there a right way to do Valentine's Day?
Maybe the way we're doing it right now.
Probably.
Yeah, I think that's the one. Talk some sports, talk some pop culture on the radio.
Take a number, ladies.
Really? You're single?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe it.
Yeah, I am.
Ah.
You don't believe that?
Only for a matter.
Did I just get your hopes up or something?
No.
You got a little glimmer in your eye there, Dave.
What can I say?
Yes, ladies, all two of you who are listening to this show right now, because obviously doesn't exactly cover our demographic.
That's not true. I'm fully trying to do a radio show that appeals to all sexes.
Well, I think we can.
I think we do.
Well, anyway, take a number.
And not only that, chicks kind of dig baseball.
Do they?
Chicks dig the long ball.
Oh, man.
Remember those ads?
Yes, I do.
The Kaufman Show, where we jump from topic to topic to topic to topic. Yes. This book club, Arkell's Acoustic.
White shoes or blue collar, line after line.
This is The Kaufman
time
Show.
Time.
You can follow me on Twitter at The Kaufman Show. Jay's at J-Pub Radio. And we'll be right back after the break.
You're supposed to be out here, guys.
Sorry?
You're not supposed to be out here.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah. We're done. You've got the meeting room.
Thank you, yeah.
You have arrived, son.
Is this the last frontier?
It's quite a drive, son. So get yourself in gear. Cause give you ain't holding. Cement takes some time to set.
It's been a long haul. Am I knocking on the wrong wall?
You have arrived, son. Messy business.
This message surely mine, a sketchy witness. They picked me out of a line, and I know that I messed up. When I drink from that cup, been entertaining.
Now you got some explaining.
This messy business, Nova Scotia. That's the blood that's in my veins. Now I'm a spinning 33, complete devotion. Is at the cost of love's commotion? No discussion.
Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. We're going to keep this sort of ambient, Jimmy. This is On and On and On. It's the final song of the 3-disc album by Mr. Plaskett. 3 is the name of it, and it's pretty awesome. It's like I said, it's going to run for most of this segment. It's 12 and a bit minutes.
We've never had a soundtrack before.
I know. Yeah. I know. Let's see if we can keep it up.
Joel Plaskett is our John Williams.
Honestly, Joel Plaskett, what a thrill to talk to him today. And he really seemed to be into it, which was great. It was so nice to, you know, honestly, Jay, like, there's a studio right behind you. You see that dark room over there?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a little box, basically.
I've been in that dark room.
Oh, right. You recorded your McLean spots there.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I've been in a lot of dark rooms.
Well, no, you threw me off. Man.
Sorry, bud. I always do that.
Jeez. You know, Jimmy, if you were there, I'd get you to turn it up right now.
If he was there.
If he was there, he's going to go back.
Yeah.
That's all. Quick. Quick, Jimmy. Come on. He's about to crack a beer. Do it. Do it. Do it. Turn it up. More. Thanks, buddy. So, yeah, it's the second time, Jay, that I've done one of those interviews in that little box. The last one was Dimitri Martin. And it's a little nerve-wracking.
With
the producer sitting on the other side of the glass staring at you. And it's a little disconcerting. I had to pretend that Scott Saxon wasn't there. And at the start, I was a little bit nervous. But I think the nervousness came across as me just being a fan. And that, I think, opened Joel up. And allowed him to not treat this as just some random interview to fill time. Like, I was stoked, man. I really was. And it's weird. Like, I was a lot more nervous to interview Joel Plaskett than I was to interview Chad Cordero. Chad Cordero is like a buddy to me. It's the guy that I've watched grow up.
Well, you interviewed Marcel Dion in there too, didn't you?
Well, yeah, come to think of it, that was the same day as
I would be nervous about interviewing Marcel Dion. He's a Hall of Famer.
You know what? I might have been more nervous interviewing Gilbert because he was on that 93 team that won the cup. I don't remember Marcel Dion, or if I do, it's at the very tail end of his career. I know him as a name in the record book. But no, I was, you know what, with Marcel Dion, it was, man, anyone can call Marcel Dion. Google Marcel Dion. He runs a sporting goods store in Niagara Falls. And if you want to go and get an autograph or give him a shout, you can fully find him. Like, he's incredibly accessible.
Yeah. Very down-to-earth guy.
Which you don't see with the retired athletes. You're seeing it with current athletes from Twitter. And Steve makes a great point. Redondo Beach Expo. We should get expos on all the time.
Why not? Absolutely. Let's go through all of them.
You know what? Let's go through all of them. Absolutely.
Yeah. Why not?
You want to put in the work with me? We got to send out a lot of emails.
I've met quite a few of them in the last year, so and they like me.
You still have Marquise Grissom's business card?
I do.
All right, let's get Marquise on the show.
Yeah.
I think that'd be really cool.
Had Moises come by, had Pedro Martinez come by, and yeah.
Why don't you see if we can get Marquise on in 2 weeks to cap off Black History Month? I think that would be pretty cool. Not going to lie, I already tried to get Delino.
And?
Still waiting.
Okay.
Yep. Still waiting. I'm okay with that. I'm so excited for next week. You have no idea. I don't like to think ahead too much, but I'll give you guys a hint as to what I'm thinking for next week. I'm going to read you 9 names, Jay. Strawberry, Mattingly, Sachs, Canseco, Clemens, Socha, Griffey, Boggs. You know the last one? You're falling right down the mystery hole with him. It's Ozzie Smith.
Mario Roberge? Oh, no.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
The starting 9 for the Springfield Ringer softball team that won the championship 20 years ago next Monday. That's right. Next week, we will be paying tribute to The Simpsons. You made fun of me last week when I played Bob Marley.
I didn't make fun of you.
You made fun of the fact that I was commemorating Bob Marley's birthday with The Simpsons, and I explained to you very clearly that to me that is the greatest tribute. We're going to have an all-star show for you next week. And from midnight on, at 11 o'clock, we've got something really special planned. We're hoping to be joined in studio, and if not in studio, then by phone, with author G.B. Joyce, which should be great, one of my favorite writers. But midnight on, we're going to pay some serious tribute to The Simpsons. 500 episodes. They're 500th episodes next Sunday. 20th anniversary of the softball episode. I'm psyched.
Our love is like a highway. It goes on and on.
Jay, what was your favorite part of the night? Cordero, Plaskett, Houston, Translaureate?
That's hard to say.
Chatting with me?
Yeah.
When Jimmy sneezed?
Three out of five ain't bad. When Jimmy sneezed was a great moment. It was the sequel, but that's Jimmy Sneeze 2.
It's not a Monday if Jimmy doesn't sneeze.
No, Jimmy's got to sneeze.
Jimmy Garofalos does a yeoman's job dealing with my ridiculousness and audio cues. Yeah.
He's got poor Jimmy running around.
And thank goodness for John Kakulakis, who's really cementing himself as to, you're going to be stuck with us for a long time, John. You're doing a great job, and we really appreciate
it. You okay
it.
With that? He hasn't had his eyes off that computer screen. Unbelievable. Yeah, the boys are running around, and, you know, Dave cracks the whip, but they're an integral part of the show.
We like the results.
Yeah.
And yeah, this song's still going. How much time left in it, Jimmy? Like 8 minutes?
There is four and a half.
Amazing.
How long is this song?
12 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the same amount of time as my interview with him today.
It goes on and on.
We're running out of racetrack here on the show, Jay. We're not going to go 3.5 hours tonight. We started at midnight, so you know, out of pity to all of you that have to get up and do stuff with your lives tomorrow morning, we appreciate it. Long live Groggy Tuesdays.
Groggy Tuesdays. Hey, without our listeners, you know, if anything, you know, it gives you something to listen to. We jump around from topic to topic, and, you know, you don't want to hear about the Habs all night long. We will talk about them.
Absolutely. Hey, but, man, love the Habs. They're my team.
They're my team, too.
But there's a lot going on in the world. The world does not start and end on Avenue des Canadiens de Montréal. By the way, I was talking about Louis last week, and when he called, I mentioned that I went by his section three times to see where he was, knowing that the cute girl was there every time. She was there again last week.
Was she?
Yeah. Feel better, Louis.
Does he feel better?
I don't know.
We'll see. I don't know
who was there tonight. I don't know if Louis was in the section or not.
Did you go by again tonight?
No, I wasn't there tonight.
During the post-game show?
I was sitting on my couch watching the game tonight and dotting the I's and crossing the T's for the show tonight. And like I said, thinking ahead to next week. Very excited. We're going to hopefully have some awesome guests for you.
It's going to be hard to beat the guests we had this week because I really did enjoy that. Jim Houston, Chad Cordero, Joe Plaskett.
Jim Houston felt like we were talking to a buddy. Like, and again, I know that you know him, but
I do know him, and I can tell you one thing. He's exactly the same way.
That's
when
awesome.
You talk to him in person, he is what he is, and I think he really enjoyed going down memory lane a little bit. How do you remember the entire lineup for the Montreal Expos in 1989?
It had a profound effect on him.
Yes, it did. what was the first baseball he covered.
That's it. He left out Tom Foley.
And Mitch Webster. I was gonna bring that up, but I didn't want to sound too nerdy. You know?
I just have great memories.
It's only nerdy as you can get. You know?
I love Tom Foley. He was, he's, you know what, and him and Dave Martinez are, I think they're still part of Joe Madden's staff in Tampa Bay. That's right, Expos are still kicking around Major League Baseball. Was it Carey that said that Jose Macias is going to be the last legitimate Expo? Is he legitimate?
Well, as long as you played one game in the Expos uniform.
Well, no. In that case, Brendan Harris is going to be the last Expo.
How many are left? That'd be a great stat to bring
up. They're dropping, but, you know, Jamie Carroll just signed a 2-year deal. There you go. 12-minute song. Look at that. Bang. Gone. Done. Huh. Look at that. Oh, it's already that time, huh? I want to thank Chad Cordero. I want to thank Joel Plaskett, Jim Hewson, Trans Laureate, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G, listen up, kid. It's not what you think. John Kay. Stayed out too late, had a little too much to drink, walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house if your house burns down. There's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand. Shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. Do you hold a grudge anyway? Because it's fun. Davey and me, face down in our suit, some French restaurant, I saw Riviere de Loup. Last night at a tour, we burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. Jay and I will be back next week at 11.
I don't know. Hey, this is Joel Plaskett from Halifax, Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, and you're listening to The Kaufman Show.
What'd that sound like?